Is this 11 or 12? How many Grey Cups is this, Glenn Suter, for you in the booth calling?
Yeah, if I'm doing the math right, it's 08 was our first one,
okay.
Chris and I. So this is 12 then, right?
Yeah, it's 12.
Number 12. So, yeah, it's, boy, I believe me, the enormity of it is something that I, not that I get more nervous, I just want to make sure that I don't have any excuses.
Well, I know you're very serious. You mentioned, like, you don't go out to the Spirit of Edmonton or Ryderville ever during the week. You don't even go out until after the game on Sunday, so you take it very serious. It's also different because during the season, you're doing two games every week. So here you get to dive in more, and it's a bigger game. You know, you got a longer pregame show, everything like that. So as you've been diving in and you look at this game, you know, Winnipeg's defense has been fantastic in the playoffs. But, yeah, you know, every game is a new game. But the receiving core of Hamilton is easily the most dangerous in the league. And Banks, of course, I thought deserving of the MOP last night.
Absolutely.
As a former secondary guy,
yep.
You're game planning Banks. I think he's the fastest guy in the league. So how do you contain him? Because we saw the Eskimos, he only had four catches, but two of them were massive and led to 14 points.
Yeah, those explosion plays that we're calling them nowadays, that's I think the superpower for Hamilton on offense, that Dane Evans can make all those throws, first of all, and he's comfortable in it. But Brandon Banks gets a defensive back out of his comfort zone in a split second, and your comfort zone as a DB is to be in your back pedal in that athletic crouch position, but staying in your back pedal till the receiver gets to about 15 yards or so. At about that point, you probably can't be running backwards as fast as most receivers can be running forward. But with Banks, that happens at around 7 yards. Now, the problem with that is you have to turn as a DB to get out of that to make sure he doesn't just run straight by you. And that's when he can have his way as far as cutting in and out, running those slants, those quick hitches or crossing routes that he'll catch a 5 or 10 yard pass and take it 30 on his own. That's because he's got the DB already turned and running deep to protect himself. So that's the challenge. And it's easy to say Winnipeg will just go zone defense and they'll take their areas, and if he comes to their area, he'll take Brandon there. But it becomes man when he gets to your area. So he's going to make you turn anyway, even if you're in a deep zone. So that's kind of X's and O's about Brandon Banks, but it's, you can't coach the speed that he brings. And now he's become a route runner as well. So if you just say, you know what, I'm just going to get up close and I'm going to turn and run with him, then he'll be patient and he'll come off the ball now half speed. And you go, what's going on here? You turn and you get comfortable, and then he runs by you. So it's a bit of a guessing game. I look to Winnipeg to go cover four, which is four deep, play kind of an umbrella over top, and try to eliminate the explosion plays because Hamilton is so good at it.
So when you do that, or that's a choice you make, what is lost? Like, what is there some other area that becomes now easier for Winnipeg to deal with?
Absolutely. Because every time you play a certain coverage, there's a weakness. There's always a weakness. And the key is, can the quarterback find the weakness? Can you disguise it enough so that he can't find the weakness until too deep in it, and then your pressure gets home? So if you play that umbrella, like I mentioned, in a sort of a four deep look, the intermediate zones, the Luke Tasker areas, become open. So now you're saying to Dane Evans, throw 12 curl routes to get into the green zone or the red zone. Throw 12 of those. We think that you're going to self-destruct before you can throw 12 in a row underneath, and we'll just come up and tackle. You might get a bunch of first downs, and the numbers might look great, but we're not going to give up touchdowns, and we're going to make you be consistent for the entire field. We're not going to give you one throw and 65 yards. We're going to make you make 8 throws to get 65 yards. That's the philosophy generally, and there is voids that you're giving up when you play certain coverages.
Glenn Suter joins us, analyst, of course, here on TSN for the 107th Grey Cup. Now you have the Bombers' defense, which, of course, has been great. But then you throw their offense with a very unique situation and rotating two quarterbacks, literally rotating two quarterbacks, right? And so you talk about getting guys out of their comfort zones. Your Hamilton's defense, we saw it against Calgary. When Strebler came in, man, the whole momentum of that game shifted, and Calgary had no answer for Strebler. It wasn't as obvious against Saskatchewan. So What does the front seven of Hamilton, and how different is their mindset from literally almost snap to snap when those quarterbacks rotate?
Yeah, it's a great question, because it was so interesting to see in the semifinal against Calgary how well the Strebler package looked. And by the way, it's not just Strebler running. It's Strebler in combination with Andrew Harris, in combination with Dembski, because those three players provide something different that stretches your defense right across the width of the field. Andrew Harris is between the tackles. Dembski can run either outside or in between the tackles. And then Strebler is an extra tailback, really. Saskatchewan was ready for it. Saskatchewan game planned for it. But I think it took away from their preparation against Zach, because you got to practice your zone coverages, your past defense, basically. And I think if you look back at the bye week and the work week going into that game for Saskatchewan, I bet they spent so much time on the Strebler package that their secondary, I think, had the worst game of the season. Their defensive backfield in Saskatchewan gave up those big plays at the wrong time. They weren't doing that during the year. But maybe they fell asleep a little bit because the focus wasn't there all week. It was on Strebler in the run game. That is an edge for Winnipeg, I think, because Paul Lapolis has the ability to put that in when he wants, take it out if he doesn't. And then the Zach factor, he's not going to be affected by rhythm because he's a veteran. So, you know, it's always a fear to put a guy in when he's thrown four or five completions in a row. You put the other guy in, are you taking the guy out of his rhythm?
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to affect Zach. Zach is saying, hey, if Strebler goes two series, I'll come back in and I'll be ready. And that's the veteran aspect of his game.
We got Glenn Suter, CFL and TSN, breaking down the Grey Cup that goes this weekend. Glenn, as a defensive player, how much can it affect a player's mindset when you have a quarterback that wants to be physical like Strebler, running the ball, not running around you, trying to run over you? In your words, that's a tailback almost.
Well, it is, and you know, this is an interesting dynamic for the officials too, because the officials are now looking at him and giving him the protection of a quarterback, and really he's not acting like a quarterback most of the time back there. He's taking the ball in shotgun. He gets the pocket protection that any quarterback would get in the new rules and player safety. But he tucks it under his arm so quickly, and he immediately becomes a tailback. So this is a challenge for the officials, too, to know when is roughing the passer or when is it just a good hard tackle on another tailback in the backfield. It's the same defensively if you're an end or a linebacker or even a secondary guy on a blitz. You're looking at Strebler thinking, I've got to get down low and get ready to take impact. He's kind of like Dunnigan. I played against Dunnigan.
Yeah.
He attacked like that too. And you have to kind of brace yourself. And then if he runs around you or stops and throws the ball, now you've stopped your pass rush and you're beat because of his reputation, not because of anything he did to you. So that's the mind games that you can get into. I say just run him and hit him, and if he runs you over, so be it.
Glenn, Andrew Harris, hasn't really had a big game yet in the postseason for Winnipeg. He had 67 combined yards against Calgary, and then he had 51 against Saskatchewan. Are you surprised that the Bombers have been able to win both games with Andrew Harris not being a factor? Do you expect him to be a bigger factor on Sunday?
I do. I still think there's an opportunity here for him. I mean, they're playing against a good defense, don't get me wrong, but there's a chance for him to put his stamp on these playoffs still, and that could be this game. I think this whole season and what's gone on with Andrew has, I don't want to speak for him, but knowing him the way I know him and just watching his body language and talking to the coaching staff and some of his teammates, I think all this has really hurt him, really affected him personally. I think no one wants to be, their name be thrown around with the word cheater around it. And I think it was wrong, for the record, that Andrew wasn't a nominee for Outstanding Canadian. I know that there's a lot in the media that disagree with that opinion, but I think he served his sentence. He took and did not appeal the two-game suspension. He served the suspension. That should have been the end of it, unless there's a league rule saying he's not eligible because of that test. There is no league rule at this point, and maybe there should be, and that's a different debate. But Andrew served a sentence, and should have been eligible for Outstanding Canadian. Because with all due respect to Cameron Judge and Enoch Mwamba, who won Canadian, very, you know, obviously deserving nominees. But Andrew's the best Canadian in the league, and maybe the best Canadian player of all time. He surpassed John Cornish. He surpassed Normie Kwong in the numbers. I think this has really hurt him professionally. I hope we can all get past it. Whatever you believe as far as whether or not Andrew Harris is a user or any of that, I don't think he is. I think something went wrong here. He had two negative tests and one positive in the same year. And one of the negative and one of the positives were 10 days apart. You know, if you know, if you've seen steroids before, the use of them before in other sports or in this sport, you know that it takes a long time for the effects to give you an edge or an advantage or get to that category where you're a cheater. Much longer than 10 days. I don't think it affected his numbers. I think Andrew Harris has always been a really hard-working guy in the weight room and always working hard to get where he's going. And something went wrong here. I don't know what it was. I know other people have other opinions. I think this has affected him. And I hope he can put it behind him for one more Sunday and make an impact in this game, because he's a great football player and a great person. He's a great person in the community that does so many good things in Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's, you know, it is interesting. I think a lot of people didn't know about the testing and, you know, one failure and one positive and a negative in that close of time period. And once you kind of have that, oh, you know, failure of a test on your resume, now that because he hasn't dominated, people are like, oh, see, he's not good because he's not juicing anymore, right? Like,
it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, I don't believe that it does. Instantly, yeah. It's not like, oh, well, suddenly he's not strong anymore. But it is a tough one. I think you bring up the mental aspect is probably bigger at play here. And Stradza, you played, and so did Glenn. I think you do care a lot. Everybody cares about the reputation. But in this case, it's just the reputation of a player. And then it becomes almost more of a person. Like, if you're a hard-hitting player on the field, and maybe a cheap shot artist on the field, they still only view that as on the field.
Right.
Right? But in this case, it seems to kind of go off of it because it's like a choice, allegedly, that you did. Right?
So exactly.
It is very different in how people perceive a player when they're caught cheating rather than when they're caught breaking the rules on the game.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, I know that the media in Winnipeg didn't make this decision based on his suspension because, you know, Brandon Banks has been suspended before, and Simone Lawrence, who was a nominee and a finalist, was suspended this year for two games for the hit on Zach Kolaris. So it wasn't about that. I get it. It's a bigger picture. But let me put it this way. If we are all judged and our character is judged our whole life on our worst moment,
yeah,
on our worst decision, we're all in trouble.
Yeah.
We are all in big trouble. So let's just say this was Andrew Harris making a bad decision. Let's just say that. I don't think he did, but let's say he made a bad decision and decided to use steroids. That's a bad decision. He paid his two-game suspension. I guarantee you he wouldn't do it again. And let's move on. And let's judge him on what he's accomplished and his whole body of work, not that one decision.
I got one last one for you, Glenn. The two coaches, they seem to know each other quite well. The relationship's pretty solid. I believe they've coached together already.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that play into their what they're trying to accomplish? Because there is that known factor of each other, maybe the way they've game planned together for different games when they're on the same team.
Well, I think there's such great mutual respect. They know sort of how they game plan. They know that, but they're going to go through their process. I think what's unique about these two guys is publicly, or when the coaches are dealing with us in the media or us on television or whatever it is, they're very different. Mike O'Shea is very standoffish. He's almost like there's a conspiracy theory. He's going to be very guarded at what he tells you and what he doesn't. Orlando is very different, more open, more ready to discuss it. But I think when they talk to their teams, they're the same guy. They're the don't get outworked. I will be completely honest with you, good or bad, and that's all a player ever wants. So I think they're very close as coaches in the room, different outwardly to us, but very similar. So I think it's a saw-off with the two guys.
Who you like on Sunday?
Well, you know I don't make predictions. You know I don't do that. But, you know, Hamilton is favorite. They should be. They've earned that. 15 wins, a convincing win in the final against Edmonton. So they'll be the favorites. For Winnipeg to upset them, I think they're going to have to turn it over a couple times and score off those turnovers and control the big play. Brandon Banks has 150 and 250-yard catches. Hamilton wins.
Quickly, what about the coaching carousel that potentially could present itself? Do you think Jason Moss stays in Edmonton? Do you think Mike O'Shea stays in Winnipeg?
Boy, that's a tough one. Everyone's sort of trying to connect dots. Like, boy, Rick Campbell would look really good in Edmonton, and Jason Moss could go back to Toronto. And, you know, there's all this discussion, or maybe back to Ottawa.
Or Rick Campbell
being in Edmonton, and then BC and Ed Hervey. And there's a lot of people trying to connect all those dots. Let's wait till Wednesday. But I bet on Wednesday.
You think that's the day?
I think on Wednesday, when the cup is done and 2 days have gone by, I think that we're going to start to hear news on the coaching staff.
Wednesday, interesting. Suits.
Middle
always,
of the week.
always good to catch up with you. Enjoy the game.
Thanks.
And we'll be watching.
Appreciate it, man.
Right
Love
here.
Our discussion. Thanks. I look forward to it on Grey Cup Sunday every time.